Okay, welcome to this week's edition of the Backman Report, presented by eDraft.com. We come to you every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres, and every week I'm alongside my co-host Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Well, Carlos, I'm a little disappointed. A golf trip I had planned to Myrtle Beach was canceled due to Hurricane Matthew. But on the bright side, I had a lot more time to prepare for tonight's show. The Web.com Tour and the Sumatra Tour events also got wiped out, but we have the European and the LPGA Tours, plus an exemption into the 2017 Masters for the winner of the Asia-Pacific Amateur was on the line last week. As well as a ton of exciting happenings around the world of golf. There's a lot going on, Carlos. Let's go.
Let's go. A lot of to talk about it, like you say. But let's start right away, like we always do, with the weekend backspin. So, Fred, tell us a little bit about this that you talk about, the Web.com Tour. It was Watch Out, Hurricane Matthew, really wipe it out. So what really happened finally? Did the cards get issued? Who got it? Tell us all about what went on with the Web.com Tour Finals.
Well, we were supposed to be talking about the Web.com Tour Finals, as you say. That was going to be the big golf story this week, or well, last weekend, because everything else was off. You know, the Ryder Cup was over. They took a week off before they start the fall series, and it was going to put the spotlight around the Web.com Tour Finals. But Hurricane Matthew changed all that. It forced a cancellation. It was supposed to be held at Atlantic Beach near Jacksonville, Florida. A total of 50 cards have been issued, however, 25 from the three Web.com Tour Finals events to go along with the 25 already issued at the end of the Web.com Tour season. They decided not to play the Tour Championship. They're just going with the three tournaments that they have already. They were stops in Cleveland, Boise, Idaho, and Columbus. After these three events, the 25 additional cards were official. Notables who would be playing for the big checks next season include, of course, Wesley Bryan, who won three events on the Web.com Tour this year, also earns a priority status for entry into the PGA Tour events. Bryson DeChambeau won in Cleveland to lock down his 2017 card. We reported that a couple weeks ago. We're going to see more of England's Andrew Beath Johnson on the PGA Tour. He finished 21st on the list. Andrés González recorded top 20 finishes in all three finals events and will return to tour for a fifth season. Scott Stallings and Will McKenzie, both former tour players, will head back to the PGA Tour next season. Stallings had the unfortunate suspension last year, which kept him from earning enough to keep his card. McKenzie keeps going back and forth between the PGA and the Web.com Tours. Martin Flores, Ollie Schneiderhans, Kevin Tway, Rod Tamping, Roy Sabatini, and Todd Bridings all earn spots on tour next year. And Seamus Power from Ireland, who performed well at the Olympics in Rio, earned his spot onto the PGA Tour also. On the other side of the coin, though, Carlos, there was kind of some sad news. Eric Compton may be calling it quits. Dave Shedlowski filed this report in Golf World. With his last chance to secure a PGA Tour card for the 2016-2017 season at the Web.com Tour Championship washed out by Hurricane Matthew, Eric Compton is at a crossroads. I'm thinking about packing it in, the 36-year-old lamented. You know, I've just become a three-round player. He just doesn't have the stamina to put four good rounds together. Compton's best finish over the past couple of years was a runner-up at the 2014 U.S. Open. He takes a 10-pill cocktail just to keep himself alive, but that regimen is just killing his golf game. He didn't have a top 25 finish on the PGA Tour this year, and just made 10 cuts and 24 starts, finished 173rd in the FedEx Cup standings. Although that's good enough for a Web.com Tour status next year, he may not do that. I'm not going to learn anything out there at my age, he said. The only thing I'm going to learn is how to be away from the family with a short lifespan. The cheers of Compton's many fans can help him overcome the fatigue associated with his medical treatment. Compton is meeting with his doctors in the hope they can change his drug protocol, but he isn't sure anything will come of it. I can make more money being a motivational speaker or something, Compton said. I really have to decide how much longer I want to do this. When I look at my situation, it's pretty depressing. I can't get it done. So, Carlos, we've got 50 new guys coming on to the PGA Tour next year from the Web.com Tour regular season and then the Web.com Tour finals, the three tournaments that they're going to count. But Eric Compton may be hanging up the spikes.
That's really, really sad news. And it's frustrating, right, when you suffer through so much, you really tried, but then reality sets in. And you really have to deal with, I can't do this anymore, and what you have loved to do for your whole life. And basically the way that he was getting his life together back again, and unfortunate for him. Hopefully we wish him the best, and hopefully he can find some, I don't know, middle ground for this. And I know it's not easy, but Eric, we wish you the best. And for the Web.com Tour, the 50 players that are now again, and the ones that are again, and the new ones, we can't wait to see what they're going to bring and who's going to be, the new rookie of the year for next year. I think it's going to be there between Andrew Johnston and Bryson DeChambeau. I think those two will be the ones battling it out, and can't wait to see what they bring to the PGA Tour. I'm sure we'll see them in near the top of the leaderboards. Hey, there was action too on the LPGA Tour, and there, Hannah Yang, she held off Chang Chong Fong by a stroke in wind and rain Sunday in the Fubon LPGA Taiwan Championship for her third victory of the year. She was 8 strokes ahead of Fong after she made a birdie on the 6th hole, and then the 24-year-old South Korean player bogeyed 2 of the next 3 holes and scrambled to par the final 9 for a 1-under-71. Fong, she made a great charge. She finished with a 66. She shipped in for a birdie for 35 feet on the par 4, 15, to pull within 2 strokes and nearly hold a bunker shot that was almost impossible to make for eagle. I mean, she almost brought the house down. She missed by less than a foot on that par 5, 18. She went for it. She went tracking the flag with her approach shot in that par 5, but she fell short in that bunker. Unfortunate for her. Yang then lagged her 15-foot birdie putt to just inches and briefly danced on the green after tapping in. It was briefly because she kept that celebration short after she had drawn criticism in South Korea for her flamboyant victory celebrations, you know, a samurai lasso routine in Florida in February and a Beyonce single for the ladies dance in Singapore in March. Also before the Singapore event, Yang's father dropped, as you might remember, a hard case suitcase that tumbled down an airport escalator and injured her rival player, Inji Chan. But hey, Yang finished at 17-under-271. She set up some key par saves with sharp play around the greens, hitting 2 inches on 14, to a foot on 15, and after Fang hold out, and to 2 feet on 16 and 17. So she was really making par saves all the way down to the wire. Canada's Brooke Henderson, she birdied the last 2 holes for 70 to tie for third with South Korea's Hyo Kim at 10-under. Taiwan's Candy Kong, South Africa's Liam Pace, and South Korea's Hee Yong Park, who was in the last group there with Hannah Yang and Chan Chong Fong, were another stroke back. Yang shot a 62 on Saturday to take a 6-stroke lead over Fong into the final round, and that 62 was the lowest score in her LPGA Tour career and matched the best round in 3 years at Miramar. The South Korean player earned $300,000 to jump from 12th to 7th in the money list, with just under $1.2 million. She's projected to go from 12th to 8th in the world rankings. Shanshan Fong, she had her third straight top four finish. The Olympic bronze medalist was 4th in the Asian Championship and tied for 4th last week in the China in the Asian Swing Open. And she's definitely a hot player and one to look for. Top-ranked Lydia Ko, she shot a 70 to tie for 20th. At 3-under, she won by 9 strokes last year here at Miramar. And now the tour, Fred, will be in South Korea next week. They have this week off. Then they'll visit China, Malaysia, and Japan. So they're full force right now in their Asian swing.
The LPGA Tour is winding down. They got a couple more tournaments left over there before they head to Mexico and then back to Florida for the race, the CMA Globe Championship. Hey, Carlos, there was a big amateur tournament last week. The Asia Pacific Amateur was held. Of course, there was a visit to the Masters tournament up for grabs for that thing. U.S. Amateur Champion Curtis Luck from Australia added a second big win to his resume by winning last week in Incheon, South Korea. Luck started the final round in four, seven shots behind the leader. He finished strong by firing a final round 67, plus he got some help from the players in front of him who all succumbed to the pressure of earning that exemption. The pressure didn't affect Luck because he already had an invite to the Masters coming in December anyhow because of his win at Oakland Hills in the U.S. Amateur. This win, coupled with the U.S. Am title, moves Luck to number two in the world amateur ranking. Looks like we're soon going to see another talented young Aussie on the PGA Tour. We can see more of him this fall as he's going to play in some of the Australian Tour events that get broadcast on TV up here. Whatever happened to Guangting Lang, you ask? He was the winner of the 2012 Asia-Pacific Amateur at the age of 13. Remember that? He made the most of his spot in the 2013 Masters by making the cut and finishing 58th, earning the Low Amateur Award. Guangting Lang is still playing. Alabama, not very well right now. He's grown so much and his body's changed that he's seeking a swing that will work for him. It's just, you know, he's just growing and it's just changed so much he can't stay on top of it. He finished far back at this year's Asia Pacific Amateur. He's soon going to be 18 years old. He's been playing in mostly professional events in China. Thus, his amateur rank has slipped to 1,234th in the world. He intends to attend college in the U.S. next year and is currently looking at Arizona and San Diego State. So Guangting Lang is still playing, but just the way things go, he's got to do a little bit of growing up and let everything catch up. You know, it's amazing when you get young boys and they hit their teens and they grow up into 18, 19, 20, some mature faster than others. It, you know, the timing just isn't there. They just can't seem to quite put it all together when they want to. That's amazing. He played so well at such a young age, and now he's got this lag in here until he can wait until his body matures before he can get playing well again. So, Carlos, that's the information on the Asia-Pacific Amateur.
I have a question for you. You know, you're a pro, teaching pro, so what would you recommend in that to those kind of players that mature early, but then their bodies not so fast? How do you approach that growth, that spurt of growth in the players when they're juniors?
You know, kids, when I work with kids, Carlos, it's all about making it fun. If you have a young player that achieves success when they're real young, most of the time they have enough athletic ability to maintain and continue on. Maybe not play quite as well as they did, but they're still better than the average player. In Guangting Lang's case, he matured so early and played so well at such an early age, and now his body growth has changed things up. The thing is, you have to stay positive mentally. This is just something that's going to happen. You have to accept it. You can't do anything about it. The only thing you can do is try and keep the golf swing as simple as possible. Keep all the shots as simple as possible. Don't try and do anything fancy, out of the norm. Just keep it basic. Don't do anything fancy. But I really think the most important thing is to maintain a positive attitude from it and just continually work and practice and go through the process. And you know, one of these days it will all come together and all that work that you do through that time will pan out. And I think it's really another thing, if you look at a positive, and also that time of working develops a good work ethic, a good practice ethic in a junior player if they will work during that time and not get down, not get negative, and stay positive. It could be really a positive when they get older. They know they have to keep doing it.
I will certainly know in the near future, obviously, what's going to happen with Guan Tianlin, but like you mentioned, I think his team is going to have a lot to do with this, and the mental aspect of the game is always so important. So hopefully he keeps a positive attitude, like you mentioned, and the team, his working team, you know, can work on that part with him, and we can see more about him once he's body stops maturing and it catches up with that ability that he had. We really would love to see him back again there. Hey, there was action in the European Tour, one of the most famous tournaments there in Europe, the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship. Let me tell you something. The hard work had been done 24 hours before, and on Sunday, Tyrrell Hatton continued to turn on the style as he collected the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship. Hatton equaled the old course record with a stunning 62 on Saturday afternoon and only a bogey at the 17th on Sunday when he had five shots in hand anyway. Stop him from high Wycombe from smashing David Howell's record aggregate, but he settled for the 23 on a total of 265. Hatton's final round of 66 meant added to Saturday's old course record equaling 62, he was 16 under for the great old track over the weekend. You know, that's as good as anyone has managed in this event and one of the greatest ever, and sent him surging clear into a three-shot lead atop the leaderboard. It was a lead which he never looked like giving up on the final day of play. He was walking down the stretch on the 18th hole, and the 24-year-old Englishman, he knew he had the title in the bag when he saw his closest competitor, Ross Fisher, some four shots behind. Sunday was just about getting the job done, and barring a dramatic collapse, the title would be his. The tone was set on the very first hole as Hatton birdied a par four. It was to be the first of six birdies he made with only a bogey on the par 417th, blotting the copybook. He's worth about $800,000, which is easily the biggest paycheck of his career. And that win capped a strong second half of this 2016 for Hatton, who was second at the Scottish Open, fifth at the British Open, and 10th at the PGA Championship. Joakim Lagergren of Sweden shot 68 for a 17th under and fourth place finish, which will secure his tour card for another season. Martin Kaymer was among the notables who finished in the T6th. You know, this Dunhill Links is played over three Scottish Link courses, the St. Andrews, Carnoustie, and Kingsbarns, across the first 3 days before culminating in a final round over the old course. And it incorporates two separate competitions, the individual European Tour tournament and a team event, which professionals are paired with tournament. I have to mention this, Thomas Peters. I'm still amazed with this guy, a young Belgian, you might remember, former Illinois alumni that burst onto the scene at the Olympics. And with Rory at the Ryder Cup, you know, he hits it far. I don't know if you've seen the video, but at the par 4-7, Peters matched his drive onto the green of the 400-yard hole. Oh, my goodness. Onto the green, 400 yards. He didn't figure it in the game. He finished T50, but wow, this guy is amazing. And quote me if you want. I said it today, October 10, 2016. This guy will win one of the next eight majors. That's guaranteed. He has such an ability. He's incredible to watch. Also for mentioning, there was another tournament, and I have to mention also fresh off the Ryder Cup win high. Brent Snedeker, he completed a runaway victory on Sunday in the windswept Fiji International, closing with a 4-under-68 for a 9-stroke margin. Yeah, you heard me right. 9-stroke margin. That was Tiger Woods-esque. He had five birdies and a bogey to finish at 16-under at Vijay Singh's design at Adola Bay. He opened with rounds of 69, 64, and 70 to take a 3-stroke lead into the final round. So he won like nine. That was a 6-stroke difference on that final round. Ranked 23rd in the world, the 35-year-old Snedeker won his first international title in the event that is right now sanctioned by the European Tour, the Australasian, and Asian Tours. He won at Torrey Pines in California in February for his 8th PGA Tour title. New Zealand's Michael Hendry was second at 7-under after a 72. Also, New Zealand's Brad Chilton was another stroke back with Australians Andrew Evans, Matthew Giles, and Anthony Houston. Hometown favorite, Vijay Singh, who also designed the course, tied for 21st at 2-under after 69. The 53-year-old Fijian is a 3-time major champion, as you all know. Fred also, Boo Weekly, was there. He tied for 33 at 1-over after 73. And fellow American Heath Slocum closed with a 74 to tie for 53rd at 4-over.
Hey, Carlos. Hurricane Matthew also forced the cancellation of the IOA Classic that was to be held at Longwood, Florida, near Orlando last weekend. It was to be the next to the last tournament of the season, and the women just outside the top 10 that are looking for their 2017 LPGA Tour cards will now have one less chance of earning one. The upside of all this is that the final event of the season, the Symetra Tour Championship, was moved from Daytona Beach to Longwood, Florida, as the eastern coast of Florida continues the cleanup process in the aftermath of Matthew. Because the first-place check is worth $30,000, players all the way down to number 25 on the Bulbic race to the card have a chance of earning one of the 10 cards up for grabs. Familiar names Nelly Korda and Emma Talley are among that group, looking for one more good week to secure their LPGA Tour card for next year. To wrap up the backswing, we want to acknowledge the win at the Lacoste Ladies French Open on the Ladies European Tour by friend of Back Nine Report, Beth Allen. Beth has a unique story. She's an American who grew up in San Diego, daughter of a PGA professional, but now resides in Scottsdale and plays primarily on the Ladies European Tour. She even donated one of her kidneys to her brother. She did not find success on the LPGA Tour early in her career, but found a home in Europe and loves traveling and playing over there. Congrats, Beth. Great win. Carlos, that wraps up the backspin.
That was all the news that we had among the tournaments, the major tournaments that were played this past weekend. And now we're going to move on to our Par 5 news section. And Fred, I don't know about this, but I don't know how many times this past weekend I got to see the commercial about the greatest comeback ever that has been expected was here. And I kept seeing it and seeing it and seeing it. And now you're going to tell me that it's not anymore?
I mean, the big disappointment, the big letdown.
So it's going to be the biggest comeback that never was. Is that
it? Exactly. It's just kind of on hold a little bit, Carlos. I know you've been working all day, and you need to know. So it's been a while since we've been leading off the Par 5 news with the Tiger Woods story, but we actually have several to talk about tonight. This was a very big week in the golf world. Tiger was scheduled to make his return to competitive golf after nearly 14-month vacation due to a series of back issues and surgeries. Wood had hinted at his return this week and officially announced his entry last week. But on the eve of actually showing up at the PGA Tour event, he withdrew and said he's just not ready. Woods told Safeway Open officials on Monday that he would be withdrawing from the event because he said his game wasn't ready for competition. In a later statement, Woods also said he would not play in next month's Turkish Airlines Open. Quoted, he says, "After a lot of soul-searching and honest reflection, I know that I'm not ready yet to play on the PGA Tour or compete in Turkey. My health is good and I feel strong, but my game is vulnerable and not where it needs to be." Golf Digest Tim Rosefort first reported the news on Golf Channel. According to Woods confidant Nota Begay, Woods, who underwent two back surgeries last year, is physically healthy, but concerns about his short game were enough to force him to postpone a return. "His game wasn't where he wanted to be," Begay said. "It's just not having enough time to get the reps in," would be my guess based on conversations with him. Wood says he now targets his own Hero World Challenge in December for the return. When I announced last week I was going to Safeway, I had every intention of playing or I wouldn't have committed, Woods said. I spent a week with the U.S. Ryder Cup team, an honor and experience that inspired me to even more to play. I practiced the last several days in California, but after a lot of hours, I knew I wasn't ready to compete against the best golfers in the world. So, Carlos, the Safeway Classic had scheduled a super pairing of Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods for the first two rounds. That sound you heard earlier was the Safeway Classic and Golf Channel people, executives just passing out and hitting the floor. Tiger and Phil, even though they are 40 and 45 years of age, are still the most recognizable figures in golf, and the Golf Channel and Safeway Classic would have garnered huge ratings this week. Jesper Parnevik got into the act. You know, I didn't know he and Tiger were old buddies. You know, I thought that they had a falling out over Ahlen because Ahlen was a good buddy of the Parneviks, if you remember. He said he had played nine holes with Tiger at the Medalist Club in Jupiter. He said Tiger's been hitting a lot of balls. He's hitting it great. He's pounding it a mile and flushing everything. On the range, at least, his trajectory and ball flight are like the Tiger we knew 15 years ago. Comebacks are never a sure thing, but something tells me this might be spectacular. It might be, but we're going to have to wait a while to see it. Tiger has also announced that he would play in the Turkish Open on the European Tour and the Hero World Challenge, which, of course, are put on the back burner now. It was also announced that Tiger accepted Steve Stricker's invitation to be a vice captain for the 2017 President's Cup to be held next year at Liberty National, just across the river from New York City. This, of course, assuming Woods does not qualify for the team as a player. We recently saw Tiger as an addition to the U.S. Ryder Cup team that beat Europe at Hazeltine. Woods seemed to enjoy his role as an assistant, and Captain Davis Love said Woods was a valuable member of his coaching staff. So, Carlos, we had intended to discuss Tiger's return and give our opinions, and my argument was going to be that he was not ready for prime time. His short game would not hold up to the scrutiny of tour pressure. You simply cannot simulate that in practice. You have to play to get that touch and that feel, that repetition. So the question now becomes, is he going to be ready for the Hero World Challenge? You know, is he going to pick up a tournament in between? With the reports we heard earlier from Jesper Parnevik, do we really expect Woods to contend? You know, it's been over a year since we've seen him play, a couple of surgeries, the rehab. You know, will he be able to make cuts? You know, all that old stuff just comes back up again, Carlos. Do we want to talk about that?
I don't know what to say because why? My question to him is what? Because obviously he doesn't talk to the press, but why committed on Friday, then over the weekend, what happened that now he's not there? I mean, what happened in those 2 days that made him think? Because for him committing, it means he thought his game was ready. What happened in 2 days? I don't know. To me, there's something that doesn't add up, Fred. Yes, I would agree with you. I don't think that he's short game was going to be ready. What we saw last time from him was terrible. I think he has too high of an expectations from him, like to try to be the same person that he was before, which is never going to be the same. So to me, he either has to lower the expectations or just, you know, go with the flow. I missed the cut. Sorry. I'm trying to get back into it. And forget about what people say and whatever happens. You know, the only, like you say, the only way that he's going to get back in playing form is really playing tournaments. And the only way that he's going to know is whether he's ready or not is playing this kind of tournaments, like this fall series, because to me, it remains a fall series. It will never be part of the PGA Tour season to me. But anyway, this time of tournaments where the top players, just one or two are there playing, these are the ones that he should be playing. And until he really does that, I don't know how he's going to perform in the Hero World Challenge. I mean, I don't think so. There's something that doesn't add up. I heard that Nota Begay, he said that there's no issue with Chris Cuomo. I don't know if there's an issue with him or not, because otherwise, either you believe Jesper Parnevik of what he was saying, that he's been flushing and hitting everything like he was doing before, then you hear Tiger not going for it. There's something that doesn't add up, Fred. There's something going on with him still there, or something happened during the weekend that he had to take some time off again.
Well, I can understand a little bit, Carlos. You know, it's kind of a catch-22 for Tiger. These guys do not want to be embarrassed. They don't want to get out there and hack it around, you know, like a 10 handicapper. They have a tremendous amount of pride. And Tiger especially even has more than the average player. He has a reputation to protect. He's got a status. He can't go out there. I mean, remember how painful it was to watch him on the last comeback last spring when he's out there last winter, when he was out there shanking shots and hitting bad chip shots and chunking. And I mean, it was painful to watch. And he doesn't want to come back out there and do that again. If he's, you know, maybe playing a game with somebody and, you know, he starts doing that, just playing a friendly game or something, it's going to happen under pressure trying to make a cut. I can kind of understand it, and I think maybe somebody got to him. And, you know, I think he was kind of fired up at being up at the Ryder Cup, you know, and he wants to get back out there and play. He wants to get back into it. But when you're not ready, you're not ready. I do think, though, there's going to have to be a time, and it's going to have to be pretty soon. If he's physically healthy, he should be playing this fall. This is a perfect time for him to come out and play a couple events. You know, he can play in Mexico. He could play on St. Simons in Love's event. He could play a couple of these events this fall and get a little bit of a feeling what he needs to work on yet this winter going forward until the calendar rolls over. So I think he's going to have to get back out there, but I can understand if he's just not quite ready, especially in the short game, Carlos.
I agree that, you know, he has this standard to hold to. Something has had to happen between that Friday and today, because he was fired up. Maybe it was that. Maybe he was fired up because of what happened in the Ryder Cup. He said that he was playing in California a couple of rounds, and he tried to practice and all that, and that's when he finally saw that his game is not up to par with that. But like you mentioned, this, and we said it, this is the place now for him to play. There are a couple of tournaments that he could play. The Shriners, he could play it there, maybe Sanderson the next week. I don't know. The RMS is there in Sea Island before, it's about three weeks before the Hero World Challenge, which is there in his in Albany. So I don't know. We have been expecting a lot of him. That maybe, like you say, it has to do with that standard that he is held to. There were people that were even commenting that he was going to win coming back, and which is, I'm not going to say utterly ridiculous, but you know, that's kind of the expectation that you get with Tiger. And the tickets were being sold out. Everything was being expected out of him, and now we're going to have to wait until December to see if he really is going to come back and play again. So, to me, I wish him the best. I can't wait to see him back again. And I mean, golf needs him. Just this proves how big a star he still is, that everybody was trying to see in the Safeway Open, a tournament that nobody sees, honestly.
Yeah,
just because he was going to be there. Okay, Phil is going to be there. No, okay, Tiger's going to be. Okay, now let's see it.
You know, now we got something. Yeah.
Now we got to see it. But no, hopefully we can see him again soon. And the good news is that he's saying that he's healthy. That's the most important part. If he's healthy, we're going to see him soon somewhere, and it'll be hopefully sooner rather than later. And, you know, in addition to those news from Tiger that he will not return to competitive play at this weekend's Safeway Open, we had some sad news, you know, from last Friday, which brought with it a letter from Tiger Woods regarding far more important matters away from the golf course. It was about Marcus Edwards, a 21-year-old sophomore at Morgan State University, who Woods describes as one of his Tiger Woods Foundation's first D.C. students. He was fatally stabbed last month in Baltimore, not far from his off-campus apartment. Edwards' dream, according to a local news report from CBS 13, was to become a Washington, D.C. police officer and to work with the area's youth. The D.C. Metropolitan Police Department posthumously awarded Edwards the status of honorary officer and declared last Tuesday, September 27, Marcus Edwards Day in D.C. Friday, Woods, he posted a statement to the foundation's website concerning Edwards' passing and the division of violence and racial tension in many of the communities where our kids live. And I invite you to go and see it. It's really touching from him, and it's another side that we see from him. And it's really touching from him, great from him to do it, and really sad this passing about this kid, Marcus Edwards. The Tiger Woods Foundation is doing a lot of good things for a lot of young students, and unfortunately, this one had a tragic loss there. Like he mentioned, one of his first D.C. students in a senseless crime, and is part of what is going on in our country right now, which really needs to stop somehow. And hopefully, you know, this kind of attention that Tiger Woods is bringing could shed some light into it. And
are the PGA Tour and the LPGA Tours considering opting out of their current television contracts early with CBS, NBC, and ESPN? The tour signed its deals in 2011, not long after right at the end of Tiger Woods' peak. And, you know, that had produced record high TV ratings for all the major network partners. Won three events in 2012, which got everybody fired up again. He won five times in 2013. But he's not won since back then. The proliferation of millions of sports fans watching events on their smartphones, tablets, and other mobile devices is having a huge effect on overall viewership numbers for the television networks. Jeff Shackelford reported through Sports Media Watch that they analyzed the network ratings for the 2015-2016 PGA Tour, which was the first completely Tigerless season since 1997, and concluded that 40 out of 64 telecasts posted a decline. That included declines for 6 of 8 major telecasts and 7 of 8 FedEx Cup windows. Most of the declines took place during the summer, from the U.S. Open in mid-June through the BMW Championship in mid-September. 22 of 24 telecasts declined in one or both measures. The season did end on a better note, as the final round of the Tour Championship held steady in the ratings and eked out a 5% increase. The Ryder Cup ratings also increased, though largely because the most recent Ryder Cup took place here in the United States rather than Europe, the one before. So, you know, those were viewed early morning hours. This one here in Hazeltine was viewed more in the afternoon, you know, got a better rating. On the other hand, sports viewership in general is in a decline in the U.S. Even the NFL, who has always been bulletproof and experienced the best TV ratings of all sports, have even seen lower than normal ratings thus far this year. Is it the Colin Kaepernick effect, or is it something else? The lower ratings for golf is also a reflection of fewer golfers in the U.S. and across the world right now. Tiger was a big draw for sports fans, and without him contending, Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, Rory McIlroy, Dustin Johnson, and Ricky Fowler just don't have that same drawing power. Yes, golf ratings are down, but so are other sports. And if the NFL is seeing lower numbers, then something else is going on. Many people are beginning to revolt against high cable bills and are simply getting their television fixed from their computer or mobile device. Many are turning to Roku or Netflix to watch programming and forsake live telecasts such as sports events. The current television packages with the networks were made when Tiger and golf were at its peak. That's no longer the case. The new television deals are going to be substantially lower than the last deals, and the tours are scrambling for ways to recoup that lost income. They're seeing exactly what print media and local golf clubs are dealing with every day: declining market and declining revenues. High cable costs are not helping. I know cable companies have expenses and that equipment must be maintained, but the cable companies have been ripping off consumers for too long, and people are finally having enough. Carlos, it's a very complicated discussion. We're going to keep our eyes on it. I'm very into it. I watch it. What's going on in that media market? And so we're going to continue to report on this as news comes along and as it develops. But this has some long-term effects. This new contract with the PGA Tour and the LPGA really has a real good window into the future of what media is going to look like in the next 10 to 15 years.
I have some mixed feelings on this one because coming from the telecommunications market, I work with carriers, and I know that it's not easy, the transition that they're making right now. And it's because there's so much connectivity, and they have to adapt from what was the old way of doing business to the one that is right now, which is pure data. I mean, it's difficult to explain to an everyday listener if you're not into technology what really takes place behind the scenes for a carrier to give you the signals like a cable provider. But it's really part of the transition. And I think that we're moving into the digital era right now where everything will be streamed, and carriers are just still keeping that old way of doing business. And it's not that they're ripping you off. It's just that that's the way it is. I mean, that's the way they had to charge you for the way they transported media. The thing is that right now, everything is through data, through your phones. Everything will be connected in the future. So definitely they're making the adjustment. And I can understand why not only ESPN, I mean, the PGA Tour, but everyone that right now has a contract with a television network would like to rethink and go back, because there's going to be a lot of digital channels, YouTube. Like you mentioned, there's Hulu, there's Netflix. There's a lot of ways for you to watch very differently live shows. And even the PGA Tour right now has, through their website, they have also live transmission. So we're seeing the transition into this, and definitely it's a turning point in how this is going to be viewed from now on. So definitely something that's going to happen sooner rather than later with the coming of the Internet of Things. Hey, let's talk about world number one Jason Day and Olympic gold medalist Justin Rose, who are planning to take the next few months off as they each try to take to rest back injuries that affected them throughout the season. Rose announced that he will be taking 2 months off from competitive golf as he gets to spend some time away from following a busy summer schedule that included the major championships and becoming the first Olympic gold medalist in golf in 112 years. Rose experienced a herniated disc at the Players in May, and he took about a month off to deal with the problem. With the PGA Tour season and the Ryder Cup now in the rearview mirror, Rose will take off the remainder of the European Tour season, and he posted on Instagram, and I quote, I'm going to read it to you. He said, "Hi, guys. Disappointed to share this news with you all, but looking forward to being back to competition / team." He said, "Following an intense summer schedule and discussion with my team, I have decided to take the next 8 weeks off for rest and recovery. As many of you know, during the Players' Championship, I experienced discomfort in my back from a disc herniation and was sidelined for the following months. I work hard to be able to return for the U.S. Open, but my ongoing tournament schedule, combined with heavy preparation for the Olympics, did not allow for full and proper recovery. At this point in my career, it is important to invest in my body, and this time off is crucial for me to return to peak performance. The remainder of the year has such a great run of tournaments, and I'm very disappointed to have to miss out on some of them. The importance of the European Tour Final Series and my relationship with the British Masters make those tournaments particularly tough to miss. I want to send my appreciation to my sponsors and fans for being understanding of my need for time off, and I thank them for their unwavering support. That was Justin Rose. As for Jason Day, well, he has been dealing with back issues for years now, and he faced on en route to victory in March at the WGC Dell match play. However, the world number one had a flare-up of the issue during the BMW Championship, the third of four FedEx Cup playoff events in September, forcing him to withdraw in the final round. Even with a week to recuperate, Day then withdrew from the season-ending Tour Championship with the same back problem. In response, Day announced he will be skipping the World Cup of Golf he intended to partner with Adam Scott, as well as the Australian Open and planned charity match with Rory McIlroy in the Philippines. He said, and I quote in a statement, "I regret that I will be unable to come home to Australia this year. I was looking forward to playing in the Australian Open and teaming up with Adam Scott on one of my favorite courses, Kingston Heath, the following week at the World Cup in Melbourne. My plan is to return to home to Australia in 2017, end of quote. You know, Jason Day, he had three PGA Tour wins this season, earning more than $8 million. And this is something that is ongoing with him. And it's unfortunate to see that now that he has reached his number one status in the world, he has to take some time off. It could potentially bump him from that number one spot, depending on how Dustin Johnson or Rory McIlroy do during this offseason to me. But Fred, it's really concerning because also it comes into play the long season that they have to play worldwide. It's really a long season, very demanding, playing all around the world. And, you know, there has to be something that to be done. I understand there's sponsors to be fed, but, hey, it's the players that are putting those sponsors there. And if we don't take better care of them, you know, we're constantly going to see him go down and down and down again.
Well, it was also the way the year was had to be scheduled this year. Everything got compressed because of the Olympics, and it just turned out to be a long season. It was very stressful. And, you know, I mean, we knew we were going to – we started talking about this back at the beginning of the year, that we were going to see this. It's just, you know, this is a young man's game now. And these guys, if you start to get a little bit of age on you, things are going to happen. They swing so hard. They walk so much. They practice so much. They travel so much. It's hard on the body, Carlos, and injuries are going to happen. It just so happens these guys are at the top of the game, and it's happened to them right now. You know, in another huge business development last week, it was announced that Gannett Media acquired Golf Week magazine. Gannett is important because it comprises USA Today Network, which has more than 110 million unique monthly online visitors. The acquisition of this premium brand will accelerate Gannett's effort to become a leader in the golf media coverage by adding Golf Week to US Today Golf, and the network's avid golf fans should be a great mix. Carlos, I've been talking with several national golf writers over the past couple of years, and everyone is expecting the axe to fall on their head every week. Fewer people get their golf reading fix from print media, plus there are a few numbers of golfers following the sport every day. Sports Illustrated, Golf Digest, Golf.com, they're all looking at various plans to stabilize and continue their operations. It appears that maybe Golf Week found a viable option in allowing one of the strongest and largest media outlets, USA Today, buy them and be absorbed into their massive operation. So this is not this is only a beginning, Carlos. You know, it's kind of related to the TV thing that we talked about. You know, it's a changing market. The print media in golf, the how the events are viewed on television or online or on your tablet, whatever, it's all connected, and we're going to see a lot more mergers, acquisitions, and closing of golf print media businesses in the future. So this is just kind of a beginning, Carlos.
Totally agree. We're going to see it, definitely. More acquisitions, more mergers, and especially from these big print media, big medias like USA Today and any other that are going to be absorbing the other ones, because there's, like you mentioned, there's a decline right now in the sport of golf. But the best thing is, you know, that there is still some outlet for them to be acquired, and so that they can still produce, and hopefully, you know, not many of them will stay out of the job, and we can still see those good authors and those good reporters there from the golf sport of golf. Hey,
I should announce though, Carlos, that Back Nine Report, NWO Golf Links, we're still independent, Carlos. Nobody's looking to buy us up yet. But just in case there's somebody out there with a lot of money, we would be open to talk. So I just wanted to clear the air on that, Carlos.
We remain open. Hey, that will wrap up our Par 5 news. And now it's time for our VIG, very important guest of the week. His name is Major Ed Pulido. He's a veteran of Iraq and one of the selfless heroes of our military that suffered a severe injury via roadside bomb. He lost a limb but has continued the good fight and has transferred his attention to Folds of Honor that provides educational scholarship to the children and immediate dependents of veterans wounded, disabled, or killed. The Folds of Honor has over 10,000 children on scholarship currently and looking to increase that number every year, Fred. Fred, tell us a little bit about this interview that we're going to listen with Major Ed Pulido.
You will never meet someone with as much energy and love of country as Major Ed Pulido. I had the opportunity to chat with him for a few minutes at the Ryder Cup, and this interview is a result of that. We had tried to connect about three times during the day. People had him so busy meeting other people, doing different things. Finally, we just happened to run across each other. The opening ceremony was over. I'd walked back to the media tent. I was going to grab a water before I went over to get the bus to go back to get my car. And he happened to be in the dining area there taking a break. And so I got him to do this interview quick, and it turned out really well. So let's give it a listen, Carlos.
Let's listen to it.
We are happy to be talking to Major Ed Pulido, who is with Folds of Honor. We're here at the 41st Ryder Cup, Hazeltine National Golf Club. And Ed, with a big smile on your face, you look like you're pretty happy to be here today.
Oh, what a great day to meet an American. We were just out at the opening ceremonies to just witness the energy of both teams, the passion and the commitment and the pride is what they talked about today. Is incredible, and working with the PGA of America and the United States Golf Association, PGA Tour, and all our partners, Folds of Honor is indeed blessed to be a part of this great, great event.
Could you believe the size of the crowd? It looked to me like it had to be over 25,000 people. It was gigantic.
Well, unbelievable crowd, and the thing that I saw was a lot of energy. And I mean, it's the end of the day, and people came out to support the effort. But more importantly, I love seeing the red, white, and blue. Honoring Arnold Palmer is incredible. His contributions to the game that we all are part of, and the philanthropy aspect of what he's done is just incredible. So I think to us it was just a winning combination and winning presentation, and more importantly, it's now time to play golf.
So you're here today representing Folds of Honor. Tell me a little bit about Folds of Honor and their mission.
Well, the Folds of Honor Foundation was started by Major Rooney, the F-16 fighter pilot, my good friend. He's a PGA professional, three tours in Iraq, and was on a United Airlines flight going to Grand Rapids, Michigan, and he would be changed forever when he saw the remains of a young man coming back to his final resting place. He decided to get the PGA and the USGA involved, and we started Folds of Honor Foundation. The 13 folds of the flag mean something, but our mission is to honor the sacrifice, educate the legacy by providing support and opportunities to anyone that's been killed, wounded, or disabled in the line of duty. And for us, that's a very noble mission that we can all rally around.
Can you give me an idea of how many kids are on scholarship currently?
Well, to date, 10,000 was at this year's start, and now we are going to add another three. So we've got 13,000 scholarships that have been awarded. It started a lot by the PGA professionals around this country. That's why we're here, connecting with our professionals, 27,000, raising money for the Folds of Honor. Last year, we had our biggest year of over $6 million. This year, we're on pace to hit that mark again. My good friend Tony Biotta runs Patriot Golf Day. So if anybody wants to get involved, all they got to do is call Tony Biotta at Folds of Honor. He will make sure that we connect you to a participating golf course, or so you can participate and actually do an event. And I think that's where we make our money.
Yeah, I know some of my good friends, Golf Life Navigators, are going to become partners of you down to Vineyards, one of the larger events that you host each year.
Well, the Vineyards is great. Tom Metzer and that whole team down there. In fact, I got a call from Mike Cox today. So we see a lot of energy behind what we're trying to do. Events is where we are focusing on, because what we want to do is, just like the Ryder Cup, we want to get the American people involved. We want them to understand patriotism. And one thing that we're finding is some of these clubs have people from overseas, and they always tell us, man, we wish we could do something like this in our country. What you're doing here is making a difference.
Folds of Honor raises funds for children, spouses, dependents of veterans that have been wounded, disabled, or killed in the service of their country.
Correct, and it's a noble mission. I live it every day. You know, I got hit by a roadside bomb on August 17th, 04. My two little girls, Caitlin and Kinsley, my wife and I, are honored that they are two scholarship recipients. They aren't ready to go to school yet, but they are ready to look at their future and look at their dreams and say, you know what, education can get me there, can make me the best I can be in this country. And with the political challenges that we have in this nation, it's just great to know that we've got some great, great patriots out there that are willing to sacrifice their resources, their time, and their energy and commitment to this cause.
Major Ed, thank you so much. You can find you on Facebook, Folds of Honor. You yes. also have your own Major Ed Pulido Facebook page. If you can't find Folds of Honor, it's your own fault, because you guys are out there pretty much everywhere. Find a golf tournament, get in it, send them some money. They need you.
Yeah, and thank you for what you're doing. You know what? To your listeners out there and the people that are part of your movement, you know what? Keep doing what you're dreaming and what you feel is right, not only to spread the good message, but to spread what I call cheer around the country that we love.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Major Ed, for taking a minute to talk to us.
All right. God bless the United States of America. And as I always say, stand up for the greatest nation in the world. Hoorah!
Good stuff.
And there you have it. That was the interview with Major Ed Pulido. Fred, any final words about this interview that we just heard?
Now, if you get a chance, Folds of Honor is really involved with golf. The PGA pros at the courses around the country, over Labor Day, they do their golf outings. They do a lot of stuff. They have different things around the country. Go to their website. Check it out. If you can spare a few bucks, send them some money. It's really a great, great program, Carlos.
There you have it. And now, Fred, it's time for the closing of the show. It's our final pods. And I'm going to start talking about the first D, who announced Wednesday that Joe Louis Barrow Jr. will step down as the organization's CEO at the end of 2017. Barrow joined the first team in 2000, and he was at the helm of the organization, which is focused on youth development, grew to include more than 1,000 golf courses, 8,000 schools, and 800 after-school locations. Barrow's exit will coincide with the organization's 20-year anniversary, as well as the conclusion of a seven-year period from 2011 to 2017, during which the first tee is on pace to meet its goal of introducing 10 million young people to the game of golf. Barrow will be on hand to celebrate the anniversary at the 2017 President's Cup at Liberty National Golf Club. We had the pleasure to have him as a VIG in December of 2014, and he was a great invite here. All we learned from him and his leadership at the first tee, he will certainly be missed there. He has been instrumental in the development of the first tee. We wish him the very best success on whatever he does. So great for him. And Fred, you ask if this piece of news is a sign that the golf is making a comeback. you know, you wonder this because one of the most expensive tee times in all of golf just got more expensive. Pebble Beach Golf Links has upped the ante to play its hallowed course from $495 to $525 this month. Now, that's just a 6% increase. It's the first price increase since April 2008, that according to Mike Bailey from Golf Advisor. It's mainly details. That doesn't even include the caddy fee, which is $80, which would bump the total over $600. For those without a calculator nearby, that's more than $33 per hole. There's simply no way you can play Pebble Beach on a reduced budget. Most tee times are reserved only through guests staying at the resort. Non-staying guests can book tee times only 24 hours in advance, if available. You might remember the lodge got a facelift, the 14th green, and the 17th got long overdue works. So there has to be somewhere to recover that money spent. You know, still, Fred, it's still one of the greatest courses in the world, as evidenced by it owning the top spot in golf.com top 100 courses you can play ranking. So definitely I'm not playing there anytime soon, Fred.
Yeah, Carlos, in the September issue of NW Golf Links, we did an article about the kind of expensive golf courses you can play. They're really the major championship golf courses you can play. But Pebble Beach came in as the most expensive, and at the time it was $495, which they now raised. Pinehurst was number two at $450. Whistling Straits is $370, which just hosted the PGA Championship last year, 2015. They're going to have a Ryder Cup there in 4 years' time. Kiawah Island is $370. And then if you're going to stay on the island, you're going to spend about that much or more also. So it's really more like about $700 to play there. TPC Sawgrass, that's not a major venue, but the Players has played there, and I consider the Players a major. So it's like $375. And then you get to Bethpage Black. Out-of-staters have to pay a whole whopping $130. But you got to go park at 4 o'clock in the morning to get your place in line, sleep in the car. New York residents can play for $65. So Bethpage Black is that's the exception to the rule. But a lot of these courses are pretty expensive, Carlos. So Pebble Beach is maintaining their rep as one of the most expensive in the world. Some other quick final putts here. Tommy's Honor is released in the U.K. earlier this year. Will be available in theaters in the U.S. Next March. It tells the story of young Tom Morris and the devastating loss he suffered when he lost his family. Of course, old Tom and young Tom were pioneers in the game of golf and set the standard early on in Scotland by winning the British Open a total of four times each from 1861 to 1872. Once its run is over in theaters, NBC and the Golf Channel have the cable rights, so it looks like we're going to be able to see a lot less Tin Cup reruns on Golf Channel. They'll be playing Tommy's Honor. According to new research reported in an article by The Telegraph, playing golf can add 5 years to your life, so you better get out there and play, Carlos. You're less likely to develop diabetes, breast, or colon cancer. Carlos, I'm going to need those 5 years because I used up a lot of years back in my 20s and 30s. That's why I play a lot of golf today. Golf could help those who suffer chronic diseases, including heart disease and stroke, as well as helping reduce the risk of anxiety, depression, and dementia, researchers found. You know, I find that I get anxious when I play golf about my score. Then I get depressed. Then I forget. I just try to forget the score, so the dementia comes in. I don't know if some of this stuff is really true or not, because my golf game affects all that stuff. The Physical Activity for Health Research Center at the University of Edinburgh said, evidence suggests golfers live longer than non-golfers. Well, there you have it. One, a couple more things here. Bubba Watson, he is a car lover and said he's bought 37 cars for the past 12 years. We all saw the General Lee that he was driving around a couple of years ago. Now he's bought a bunch of cars. He joined a Pensacola automotive dealer, Sandy Sansing. Together, they announced the renaming of the Chevrolet dealership in Milton, Florida, as Sandy and Bubba's Milton Chevrolet. So Bubba's a used car dealer. Watson is also co-owner of the Pensacola Blue Wahoos and opened an ice cream candy store. I like the ice cream and candy store. That's a good idea. As I stated, doing okay on the PGA Tour, I started wasting a lot of money on cars. Hopefully, he's not going to be wasting his money on a losing dealership. And Carlos, finally, if you're tired of hearing the memorials and accolades about how great Arnold Palmer was for the game of golf, ESPN is providing an antidote. They must be getting hard up for storylines because November 1st at 8 p.m., 30:30 will air Hit It Hard, the story of John Daly. What happened to Grip It and Rip It? I guess they didn't like that. John has recently been seen waddling around the Champions Tour, sucking on coke and chain smoking. He still can be seen missing the occasional cut on the regular tour when he can find an exemption. You know, I am curious what they can add to the volumes of video, newsprint, and stories that have been offered for public consumption over the years on Big John. I think they've just about run the gamut on all the stuff that John Daly can be talked about. Carlos, that wraps up the Back Nine Report for October the 11th, 2016.
And Back Niners, with that, we wrap up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, Major Ed Pulido. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio, or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or tune in. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres. Along with Fred Alvader, we wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.